Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Young sexuality always brings vulnerability. In our digital age, that vulnerability can be sharp. Digital images, knowingly or unknowingly taken, can almost instantly become a tool of sexual shaming, of teenage cyberbullying that goes on and on. It's today's Scarlet Letter. One New York City teen kept seeing those shaming sexual images on her Facebook feed. She decided to talk to her peers about it, to call them out. She's with us this hour on Point, the new Scarlet Letter, Teen Sexual Shaming Online. You can join the conversation. Has it happened to you, your teen, an intimate moment suddenly online, shaming? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. It's been in literature for a long time, thanks to Nathaniel Hawthorne and others, and in the movies. In this version of The Scarlet Letter, set in the 1600s in New England, Hester Prynne has a child out of wedlock. Here's a clip from the 1934 movie based on the novel. Hester's in the middle of the town square, where a throng of townspeople have gathered for her sentencing.
Hester Prynne, it is now ordered that you shall wear upon your bosom for the rest of your natural life the Scarlet Letter A.
A wise sentence. She will be a living sermon against sin.
It would be better if they put the brand of the hot iron on her forehead. That she could not hide.
Let her cover the mark as she will. The pain of it will always be in her heart.
That was then in Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter. What's now is teen cyberbullying and sexual shaming online. Before we get started today, listeners, please note this hour will contain some explicitly sexual language and situations. I want to welcome into our conversation right now from New York, Temitayo Fagbenle. She's 16, a junior at a Manhattan high school, lives in Queens. She's one of New York Public Radio WNYC's Radio Rookies, an initiative that gives teens the tools and training to report for radio. Temitayo has done that to very dramatic effect. Her recent piece aired on WNYC on the online shaming of teenage girls. It was called Sexual Cyberbullying, the Modern Day Letter A. Temitayo, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And first of all, I just want to say good work. You took your microphone out there and really brought back an interesting story. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But it's a tough story, though. And I wonder, when you were thinking about what you were going to do with your microphone and your radio reporting, what drew your attention to this issue, this problem, Temitayo?
Well, the issue wasn't very far from me, per se. Mm-hmm. I'm a teenager. I use Facebook a lot. I use a lot of social media. So I see this every day when I flip through my news feed on my phone, when I'm on the computer. And, you know, I just wanted to report on it because I see a lot of cyberbullying reported on from an adult perspective. So I wanted to report on it from a teenage perspective.
Give us a sense of what you see when you go to Facebook along these lines when it comes to sexual shaming or that kind of loaded term, but nevertheless it's out there, slut shaming. What were you seeing? What do you see?
Well, I mean, in my story, I actually have a scene where I report a picture that I saw. It was of a girl, and she was half naked. And these kinds of pictures, these kinds of videos, they aren't uncommon on Facebook. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you'll just flip through. I mean, I would have to say, out of like every hour or so, I see something along those lines.
Every hour or so.
Yeah.
And by along those lines, you mean somebody not fully dressed or in some kind of intimate moment with a digital photograph up online.
Yeah, it mostly happens at night because I mean, people don't want to get caught, so they usually put it up at night and then they remove it afterwards, and that's what usually happens. It's put up and then it's removed, and it's kind of untraceable.
Who's putting these pictures up?
It's mostly boys. Sometimes girls put it up.
And is it boys putting up images of girls that they've been with one way or another, sexually?
Yeah, yeah.
Are the girls aware that they even have the digital image in the first place?
I believe most of the time that the girls aren't aware that the boy was even recorded them or took a picture of them. And, you know, in very few occasions, the girl might know that the boy is taking a picture of him, I mean, of her, mm-hmm. or taking a video. But I'm sure they don't want it to end up on Facebook.
And what's the point of the boys putting it up? Is it for bragging rights, or is it to shame and embarrass the girl, or both?
It's something like both. You know, when boys are seen as somebody who gets a lot of girls who is highly sexually active, that gives them points in modern day society. However, when girls do the same, they're called, you know, hoes or whores,
mm-hmm.
and there's also the idea of shaming girls for being sexually active, and by putting up the video, putting up the picture, the boys do both at the same time. They gain points for themselves as well as shaming a girl.
Though, with these images being shared around, you describe girls doing that to one another as well.
Yeah. Girls definitely, I would have to say that girls are a bit more harsh on other girls about what they do. I find it quite ironic because, you know, in this day and age, teenagers aren't specifically expected to not be sexually active. And a lot of these girls who comment on these pictures or videos, they do the same things, you know, but their videos or their pictures, they don't end up on Facebook. And when they see the other girls mm-hmm. on Facebook, they feel the need to shame them.
And it happens plenty. Timoteo Fagbenle has done a terrific job of reporting on this as a radio rookie for WNYC. She joins us from New York. Timoteo, we've got some of the sound from your report that ran a couple of weeks ago here. And let me just begin to share. Here's a girl you talked to who brings up the secret recording of a sexual encounter.
There's people that they don't know when they're taking the picture. There's people that don't know they're getting recorded. That's not fair that a guy can actually hide his phone, have sex with you, and record you, and then show it to his friends like, yo, look.
Bragging on those secretly recorded photos. Sometimes there may be participation or girls passing the photos around. Here's another clip.
Girls do it to themselves. Half the time we can't even blame guys. Like, she was really looking into the camera, smiling.
And here's a little bit when Timoteo was in just ninth grade. One of her classmates was the victim of one of these online shaming things. Her boyfriend posted intimate video online. The young woman was the one to suffer the consequences.
He was going around holding his head high, saying, oh, well, I was able to do this with her. And he gave me a bad name. It was on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, WorldStar. Everything.
So WorldStar is like the X-rated version of YouTube.
It was on WorldStar?
It was on everything.
Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, WorldStar, everything. Timoteo's Fagbenle is reporting right there. Timoteo, these images, these videos can travel fast and they can travel very far.
Yeah, the internet is quite an interesting thing. I mean, the picture in my story that I reported, I remember seeing it, and it was put up 15 minutes ago, and by that time, it already had 300 likes. These videos, these pictures, they're put up on the internet, and even though the boy might delete them, they're on the internet forever, and people can access it forever. And these pictures and videos, they spread so fast that, you know, somebody can save it on their phone, and suddenly somebody from a place you don't even know has a video of you.
And it's out there maybe for a very long time. Something,
very
I mean, in the in Nathaniel Hawthorne's story, she could eventually take that Scarlet A off.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Or she can move to a different town.
Right. But in this case, what the images are global, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, it's the internet. The internet is so wide. And that's why this topic is so important, because these girls, I mean, they're 16, 15, 14. They're very young. And, you know, I'm sure they realize the effects of it, because when they go to school, people ostracize them. But, you know, that's one thing to be ostracized at school, and it's mm-hmm. another thing to have this video of you put up on the internet forever.
I mean, I guess I need to ask, how deep is the shame these days? How serious is it? Is it just like, you know, for one morning you hide your head in your hands and feel embarrassed, or do people really get wounded for more deeply, for a long time, Timothy?
Well, lately there have been some cases. I don't quite remember the girl's name. There was this girl on Long Island where a team of football players, they put up a video of her, and she committed suicide. So, you know, clearly these things are very deep cutting for these girls who go through it.
Are your classmates glad that you've brought this to public attention, or are they looking at you and saying, hey, why are you doing this?
I'm not sure what they think. I think they're much more excited that their voices were on the radio.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about teenage cyberbullying and sexual shaming with a teenage reporter who's telling a compelling, disturbing story of what goes on the new digital Scarlet Letter, aimed especially, again, at girls, taking, sharing, posting sexual images that can ultimately shame. Timotayo Fagbenle joins us from New York City, 16 years old, a junior in high school in Manhattan, and she has done a terrific report for WNYC, the big public radio station there, for their Radio Rookies program on sexual shaming. Among her peers, really called out a lot of people, really kind of called out a whole dynamic, a whole phenom that is affecting more people than you would guess. Of course, it's been around for a while, this idea of shaming, of calling people sexually profligate. Here back in 2004, a little scene from Mean Girls. A teacher, played by Tina Fey, admonishes her students on the growing sexualized nature of bullying.
You all have got to stop calling each other sluts and whores. It just makes it okay for guys to call you sluts and whores. Who here has ever been called a slut?
And all the hands go up in that room, Tina Fey and Mean Girls in 2004. 2013, Timotayo Fagbenle took her microphone out as a radio rookie, spoke to one girl who had video of herself posted online about how it happened, what she knew.
I kind of had a feeling that something was wrong, but I didn't want to believe it.
Can you just walk me through the first day you came to school after it happened?
Well, I came to school hoping that it wouldn't be too big of a deal. I was walking around the school with my hood on, trying to just, to get to class.
Trying just to get to class after a sexual shaming online. Little heads up here again. There's explicit sexual language and circumstances that we're talking about in this hour. So a heads up on that front. Timotayo, we've got lots of people calling in. Let me go to Allison in Boston. Allison, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling because I'm actually a counselor in the public school system, and I had a student who had a very similar case. It was a 16-year-old girl, and she got an anonymous call on her cell phone of someone threatening to take Facebook photos and Photoshop them with her naked. And then, I don't know how they would do that, but, you know, somehow make her naked and then post them all over online. And the issue I wanted to bring up is the fact that the school had very little consequences for this action. They basically said, we can't do anything unless, you know, the bullying happens on the school grounds. So it just seems to me like cyberbullying doesn't really have the rules or whatever, the law behind it to really do anything, because, you know, the phone call didn't happen on campus and the Facebook didn't happen on campus.
So there's no recourse for you as a school counselor. There's not, you feel, a whole lot you can do about it, Allison.
Not much besides be a good counselor to the students.
Yeah.
There's not a lot that the school can do to help make sure that doesn't happen.
And so, of course, it often does come to the attention of school administrators, though, because, you've got a shamed student in school. The school's talking about it. In Timoteo's reporting, here's a scene where the principal of the school found out about the video of one of his students, notified the mother of the young woman in that video. Here's the student.
I went back to class, and like half an hour later, my mother was in the school. And I couldn't even look at my mother because I felt hurt, and I also felt like I disrespected her. And that I didn't want kids in the school to look at my mother and be like, wow, she raised nothing.
Timoteo, I'm going to bring this issue to you. Let me get another call here first from Nashville, Tennessee. Carly's calling. Carly, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I'm a sophomore in college, and so I'm, pretty recently graduated from high school.
Yeah.
And there were, so many instances I can't even recall of, either, rumored sexual activity or, posts on Facebook of, naked pictures of girls. And I remember one instance in particular, that girl, they actually engaged in sexual activity in the parking lot of the school.
Yeah.
And the guy who was involved took pictures of the girl and put them all over Facebook. And it actually caused a fight. So, these girls were saying about the girl who was involved, how could you be so stupid? It's your fault.
Wait,
your
so
fault.
People fought the girl?
Yeah, who got in the fight, Carly?
It was the girl who was involved in the sexual activity. And actually, a girl who was part of a Christian organization on campus,
yeah,
who, started blaming her, calling her, a slut, which, not the most Christian thing to do, in my opinion, but so they got in a fight, and actually both girls were expelled. So, the caller earlier was talking about no recourse for the people, but the people who, post the pictures on Facebook, and it's a school-wide thing. But in this case, it kind of seemed like the girl was punished for being victimized.
Right. And Carly, we see this in Timoteo's reporting, but you're calling from Nashville and saying, in your experience, this is not unusual, this kind of thing happening.
No, not at all. And, it's usually that the girls are blamed, even though, in my opinion, it's not their fault, that it is, it is this sexual shaming that you guys have been talking about, that, these girls are victimized and then made to feel like it's their own fault, which I think is so sad. And just, we really need to change that culture.
Absolutely. Carly, yeah. Thanks for your call. Timoteo, what do you say first about you hear the tensions that Carly saw erupt after this one incident went up online. What about the tensions that come after this happens, and who piles on? Who does the shaming?
Well, the shaming is done by both boys and girls. I would have to say that because girls, like when girls look at it, I mean, from what I hear from girls who have conversations about this, it always is a culture of victim blaming. It's always like, how could the girl let this happen to her? She knew she was being recorded. And in many instances, the girl doesn't know she's being recorded. And in terms of the school recourse, mm-hmm, I would have to say that it depends on which school it is. I am very lucky to attend a school that is very much involved in bullying inside of the school as well as outside of the school. And by outside of the school, that means Facebook as well. When there are instances of bullying on Facebook or any other social media outlet otherwise, mm-hmm, the school immediately gets involved and stops the situation.
I've got some tape here, Timoteo, if I may, that you, yeah, you recorded Erica Doyle, the assistant principal at your school, and here in your radio reporter role, you were asking her about the potential criminality of online shaming.
In cases where somebody might put up a sexually explicit video, is it necessary for you to contact the authorities?
Yes, absolutely, because once we're dealing with digital media that is sexually explicit, that has been captured and shared with the public, that actually now is a criminal matter.
Erica Doyle, the assistant principal. But Timoteo, did it really become a criminal matter? Have you seen any instance in which your school or others you're aware of got police involved in these events?
My school is actually the first I've seen personally that has gotten police involved in situations of cyberbullying. The boy I interviewed that he put up a video of his girlfriend in middle school, he also faced criminal charges. When he put up that video, he spent a night in jail. And I believe that most of the time when these girls, they see the pictures or videos put up of them, I don't think people are educated enough about the actual criminal procedures of that. They don't think it's a criminal act. So a lot of these girls, a lot of the people who see this, they don't report it. And that's why these boys, they put up the video, they put up multiple videos, multiple pictures, and they still, the police still haven't gotten involved.
We'll talk in a moment with an attorney about legal recourse here. We'll talk about your interaction with Facebook as well. You raised the issue of the boys who are often involved in this, and I'm curious about how they look at it. You've got tape of you talking with one of your friends in middle school, I guess. He had emailed a topless picture of a girlfriend to his friends. Here you are talking with him. And just a warning, this clip contains some language listeners might find offensive.
Did she transfer out of the school after?
Nope. She stayed and continued to be the smut, smitty, slide, skip, scap, scallywap, you know, whore.
Okay, Timoteo, you know this boy. In fact, I think from the way you describe him in your reporting, he's a friend of yours. So what's up with that, you know, cavalcade of derogatory words? What does he really mean by that? Does he really, you know, think she's down and dirty? Or is this just boys, I don't know, goofing on girls?
Yeah, it is him. I mean, because he thinks of it as a joke. You know, he doesn't see the actual repercussions on the girl. He doesn't sympathize with her. I mean, a lot of people have been asking me, how could you have a friend like that and this? But I believe that a lot of these boys that put up these videos, these pictures, they're very immature. And even though I do believe that they should be charged with criminal acts, I do believe that they should have a way to redeem themselves.
I wonder what that might be. You asked him here if he intended to be malicious.
Did you intend it to be malicious?
I guess I thought it would be cool or something. It took me a day to send it out. And then from a day, it just went around until it finally got back to the school and the teacher saw it.
Then it wasn't so cool, but Timoteo presses him in her reporting.
You said that when you decided to do it, you thought it would make you cool. So did it make you cool?
Yeah, after it happened, there was a lot of like, yeah, man, that was awesome.
You sound pretty unremorseful right now.
I regret doing it to her, but still, I didn't have to go to jail. Porn websites do it every day, so even the girls gave me props. But there was about like 1% of them that, you know, that thought I did the wrong thing.
Porn websites do it every day. So, and of course, there's a lot of truth in that. Christy in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Christy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question was, is it going to be to the point where eventually if you choose to have sexual relations with someone, you have to sign a waiver saying you cannot be videoed or pictures taken, which would hold, I guess, bigger legal ramifications if someone did do that?
Well, I'll put that to Timoteo, but what do you think, Christy? You're listening to this. Nobody, or few, surely, would want this to be the road they go down. What do you think it's going to take to deal with this? Or is this just the way it is in a digital age, Christy?
No, I think there should be stronger laws against it, and people should be prosecuted. I mean, I have 3 daughters. My oldest one is 14. I would be horrified if something like this happened to her. You know, I mean, eventually, yes, we all become sexually active. So, I mean, where does that leave you? You have to have some protection somewhere.
Timoteo, what do you think about what protection a young woman, let's say, in this case, has? Or, you know, Christy says, what's it going to take? A signed, you know, letter saying you won't do this before any activity, but then somebody could just, you know, do it anyway. I mean, how does this get worked out?
The taking of the video itself, the taking of the picture of itself is in is a criminal act. I mean, the letter, I don't think it would prevent a boy who intended to be malicious, who intended to put this video up on the internet. I don't think that would prevent him much.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And yet it seems an awful cloud to go into the world of very young sexuality under worrying that you just don't know if this is going to happen, if something that's,
right.
You know. Maria in Buffalo, New York. Maria, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My question here is for the other side of digital shaming. I've seen in the last 2 weeks in my own news feeds, via my teenage son's friends, that there have been videos put up of a young lady ingesting her own feminine product, another young lady who has not only allowed but encouraged her dog to sexually violate her, and these things go viral across the net. I mean, what kind of message is that sending to any of these young people that, particularly one young lady who's got a contract with Tosh.0, she's going to be on TV now.
Are you saying, you're talking about young women putting up their own images of themselves, Maria?
Yes, exactly. What kind of...
Yeah, Tematayo, have you found instances of that? What about that?
Yes, I actually do know, I've seen those specific videos that she's talking about on my newsfeed. I see a lot of these kinds of videos because Facebook has this new feature where they show you what other people like. I try not to watch those videos because they actually disturb me very much. But these girls who put up these videos, you know, unfortunately in this world, sex sells, you know. Sexually explicit things are what makes money now. And these girls, when they put up the video, I'm sure they're thinking, like, wow, I'm going to get famous. Because that is in effect what happens. You know, this video is viral now. Everybody knows how these girls look. And even though they sacrificed, I mean, they sacrificed themselves to do it, they did get famous. And that's what a lot of teenage girls want, to be famous.
But what a kind of fame. Tematayo Fagbenle took it to Facebook. Here's tape from her report.
I don't typically do this, but when I saw that photo of the girl lying down on a bed without underwear, I decided to report it to Facebook as harassment. Okay, so Facebook sent me a notification. It says, 15 minutes later, the photo was still up. Facebook said that it didn't violate their community standards. But their community standards state a strict policy against any explicitly sexual content where a minor is involved.
It now has 500 likes.
So then I reported it as pornographic content. After another 15 minutes, I got a similar message.
Content not removed. What?
Radio rookie for WNYC New York, Tematayo Fagbenle, trying to bring it to the attention of Facebook. We've got a break coming right up here. But after all the attention you've given this, Tematayo, has Facebook responded yet?
They actually responded to me through somebody else, through a reporter who prompted Facebook with a response.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about teenage cyberbullying and sexual shaming with a remarkable teenage reporter who's telling a compelling, disturbing story of what goes on, the new digital scarlet letter aimed especially, once again, at girls, the taking, sharing, posting of sexual images that can ultimately shame and can be around for a long, long time. Tematayo Fagbenle joins us from New York City. She's in WNYC, the big public radio station, is their Radio Rookie program. She saw this going on. She got her microphone out, and she has done some terrific reporting on it and thinking about it. Here's some a little bit more from her report, which ran just a couple of weeks ago.
Before you yourself were affected, what did you think of girls like that, and what do you think now?
Well, I would do the same thing that happened to me. Like, I was calling them names and I was judging them. But then when it happened to me, there were situations, like, on Facebook where they'd be blowing up some other girl's spot. And I'm like, wow, she screwed up the same way I did.
Teenagers today aren't more cruel than they were in the 1600s. It's just that now when we chastise each other, everybody that has access to the internet can see it. And once that picture or video is out, you can't be completely safe in your mind that the past won't creep up on you at some random time.
I saved the pictures. I know the teachers deleted. I still have them.
This is the new Scarlet Letter.
It is now ordered that you shall wear upon your bosom for the rest of your natural life the Scarlet Letter A.
Roll over, Nathaniel Hawthorne. Timoteo Fagbenle brings us the new Scarlet Letter. It's digital, it's sexual images, video that get up online, and they can last a long, long time. Heads up, warning, there's some explicit sexual language and circumstances described in our conversation this hour. Timoteo Fagbenle joins us from New York City. Timoteo, lots of response here to you. Mari writes, she says, I hope this broadcast is heard by millions of teens. If teens can spread vicious shaming online to be seen by masses of people, they also need the tools to spread peer-to-peer education just as virally. So great respect for you, Timoteo, for your bravery and efforts toward curbing this damaging trend. Here another listener writes, she's my hero. That is you, Timoteo. I heard the original Rookie Reporter report. My son's 11. Already the boys talk about the girls who are sluts. I asked him why they don't talk about the boys that were with these girls. He had no answer, but that made him think about it. So you've heard from Facebook. What have you heard, Timoteo?
Well, Facebook, they refused to talk on the record when I asked them.
I mean, their own statement online says, Facebook is a place where you can connect and share openly. When you're on Facebook, you're surrounded by your friends and family. What do you think about that, Timoteo?
We're surrounded by our friends and family. In what sense? Because, you know, when I go on Facebook, I see a lot of sexually explicit things that I wouldn't really want to, you know, see around my family or friends. So, I mean, they are trying to make Facebook seem as innocent as possible, but we all know what Facebook can and is used for.
Let's go to Karen in Waltham, Massachusetts. Karen, you're on the air with Timoteo.
Hi, thanks, Tom, and thanks, Timoteo. Listening to you, and this is the first I've ever heard of this. I'm not on Facebook. I'm a middle-aged person, and I don't do Facebook. So I was under the impression that the younger generation were becoming more and more socially evolved and very happy about that, and this is a real eye-opener. And what it says to me is I was rather, you know, struck by how thinking that our younger generations are becoming more and more socially evolved, but really it's the same old misogynistic thing that is everywhere, not just here. And, you know, I wonder when it's going to end, and I feel that it's only going to end when women really remember who they are and that they are the gatekeepers to the next generation and 50% of the population, and it's time for it to stop. Because this is no less misogynist than the Taliban, and not to even pick on the Taliban, because it's all over the world. This keeping women down, trying to shame women,
And using new tools to do it. Karen, I appreciate your call. Timoteo, let me put it to you. I mean, it's a lot to put on a 16-year-old. But do you feel that sort of keeping women down dynamic at work here?
Yes, I definitely feel it. I mean, one of the things that was originally in my mind when I decided to tell this story was that aspect. You know, misogyny is all over the world. It just takes in different forms. And here in America, it's something like sexual cyberbullying. That's our form. And in Iran or in the Middle East, it's the Taliban. But here it's the same. It's just, you know, over the internet.
Becky in Atlanta, Georgia. You're on with Timoteo Fagbenle in New York, Becky.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Timoteo. Thank you for your thoughtful program about this topic. I'm a survivor of bullying when I was a kid, but I did not have to deal with Facebook. I wanted to say two things. I agree with the former caller about that it has to do with boys being raised to respect women or disrespect women. And I think we need to maybe focus our efforts a little bit on being good examples to boys. And also, I wanted to tell a story of one of my best friend's daughter when she was a senior in high school, went to the beach, was given a date rape drug, was videotaped while being raped, and it was put on the internet and it went viral. And as a result, she fell into a deep depression, became addicted to heroin, and ultimately died of a drug overdose. Oh. And prior to this, had no, you know, problems with drugs or anything. It was just so emotionally devastating for her.
Wow, that is a terrible story, Becky. I'm sorry to hear it, but I appreciate your call. I mean, Timoteo, what are you seeing in girls who have been hit with this? What's the sort of arc of their emotional, I don't know, recovery or lack of recovery? How do they deal with it over time?
Well, it depends definitely on each separate girl. The girl I interviewed, I mean, I'm not too well of a feeler of these types of things, mm-hmm. but I do think that she's recovered a lot from what happened in ninth grade. She's found new friends.
We're glad for that part of your report here. Brenda in Camden, South Carolina. Brenda, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just want to applaud the reporter, first of all, for bringing this situation so to light, and also for bringing up the idea or the something I don't hear very much, which is the criminal prosecution of these cases. Unfortunately, it seems like there is not very much criminal prosecution, even though these are pornographic images. And if it were a 30-year-old man taking these images, they would certainly be headed to being arrested.
Well, one might like to think so. I mean, I don't know. So much goes on these days. But I want to bring that issue right to center stage, Brendan. I appreciate your raising it. Timoteo, if you'd stand by in New York, I want to also bring in Danielle Citron right now from Baltimore, Maryland, professor of law at the University of Maryland, focuses on information privacy and civil rights, author of the forthcoming book, Hate 3.0, The Rise of Online Harassment and How to Stop It. Danielle Citron, thank you very much for being with us today.
Tom, thanks for having me and for having Timoteo. She's done such a terrific job bringing light, I think, to such an important and prevalent issue.
She sure has. Bring your expertise to bear on this. Here, listeners are asking, like Mark says here, don't child pornography laws apply to these posts? What about the law and what we're hearing, Danielle?
Yeah, so, you know, what we often see is just the under-enforcement of law. So it's not that there are no laws on the books to address the kind of invasions of privacy that we see. You know, so there are state privacy laws that are criminal that cover collecting or recording of naked images without someone's consent in ways that they wouldn't have reasonably thought they were being, you know, taped.
Mm-hmm.
It's covered by criminal law in certain states, as well as its publication online. And those laws are simply under-enforced.
But these are minors. Yeah. Isn't it always illegal to...
Right. So there are child pornography laws that are on the federal level as well as the state level. And it's not that we do nothing about child pornography, but I think, you know, the kinds of actions that we see federal prosecutors getting involved in are like huge child porn rings that we see online, you know, the peer sharing of gruesome child pornography. Emily Bazelon just had a terrific story in the New York Times Magazine this past weekend about kind of rings that we see, the sharing of child pornography. And I would say the federal prosecutors see that kind of sharing of information and taking of it is very different from the kind of, you know, the teen stuff that Timoteo is talking about, right? It's not that it is different, but they see it as differently.
Well, let me ask you about that. I mean, you've written about revenge porn that can go on at all ages and entirely adult women who can be really have a problem with this. What about when it's teenagers? I mean, would you bring the full force of the law down on teenage boys who are doing this, or girls for that matter? Or is that the wrong instrument for this?
Right. You know, we saw that in, at least in part, in the Darun Ravi case, you know, where we had a college student from Rutgers filming his roommate having sex with a man and then airing it online, or at least for some to see. Mm-hmm. He was prosecuted under New Jersey law for invasion of privacy, as well as kind of bias intimidation, that he targeted his roommate, Taylor Clementi, because he was gay. And the jury convicted him. But what was interesting is that when the judge sentenced him, he received a rather light sentence and no sentence for the bias intimidation. So in some sense, although the jury sent the message that it was serious, that we see this as discriminatory, that it's shaming and demeaning and really harmful, you know, the judge in his sentence, sort of sent the opposite message. And I think we've got to be really careful when we bring criminal law to bear in cases involving minors, because you can have a backlash.
What about Facebook itself, if I may ask? Let's say that Timoteo and her peers, teenage girls and others, boys, wanted to kind of, you know, police this themselves.
Yeah.
She tried to bring it up with Facebook, and the initial response was really nothing. So how do you get the marshal the law here to get Facebook's attention a little more effectively?
Right. I think, like, on the first score, I find that so surprising, because I sort of see Facebook and have talked to them extensively. They have such a strong kind of sense of themselves as protectors. They have a huge chief safety team with offices all around the country, but we have to remember they have a billion users.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can only imagine the number of complaints that they receive. So they get it right a lot of the time, and it sounds like in Temi Tamayo's case, not at all, right? They blew that. They did not get that right. But I just find it surprising, because there are so many actors in the space that have their whole point is to encourage revenge porn. And because of the federal law that immunizes site operators from liability, they get a free pass. So you've got site operators of revenge porn sites who are proud of what they're doing. They sort of style themselves as ruining people's lives and shaming them. And they make money, as Temi Tamayo was saying, it's all sex sells. They make money off of it.
I'm going to put the same question to Temi Tamayo, but let me put it to you. So you've got a technology that encourages this, maybe, on a mass scale, and way too many people willing to get into it. What do you think about how society can or ought to address this? How do you come at it, Danielle?
Right, so I think we've got to take kind of a multi-pronged approach. I think law exists. It's not non-existent. We have cyber stalking laws on the federal and state level. We have privacy laws. We have tort law. The problem is law is so often under-enforced, in part because of, like, the social attitudes that Temi Tamayo faced as a young person.
Mm-hmm.
They're prevalent in police forces. So the notion that it's just a joke, you know, it's frat boy nonsense, it was cool, right, as that student told, you know,
the boy said,
right, boys will be boys, it's cool, like, I got props for it. That kind of attitude we see in law enforcement, who say, just turn off your computer, it's just juvenile antics, clean up your search, it's a civil matter, it's not for us to take care of.
So if that doesn't work, what should, what will?
Right, so can we bring civil lawsuits, right? We can, for things like intentional infliction of emotional distress, privacy invasion, especially when it involves naked photographs. And the problem is it's expensive to sue, right? Mm-hmm. So even if we try to go after the posters, people who shared it, you know, the young boys who share this information without the person's consent, it's really expensive. And it's hard to get lawyers to take it on contingency, because no one's got a deep pocket. And the problem is that there's complete immunity to site operators who can't be forced to take it down, even though the law that this immunity provision is embedded in was called the Communications Decency Act. Sort of ironically, courts have interpreted that to suggest there's this blanket immunity for all online service providers for content that's posted by others. So that's a naked photograph, right?
That is not exactly consoling, but you give us the legal picture anyway. Danielle Citron, we'll look for your book, Hate 3.0, coming out soon. I appreciate you being with us from the University of Maryland today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Timothy, I want to come back to you, because you've really done some important work here. What's your thought on how we as a society, how your peers in age or the teenagers can, should respond to this?
You know, I don't pretend to offer up any tangible solutions. I just hope that by telling this story, the issue can be brought to the table and we can work from there.
What percentage of boys do you think would do something like this? Is it a tiny percentage, or has it become kind of normal?
It has become definitely normal. There's this this new feature recently on Facebook where people can subscribe to your news feed, people can subscribe to your status updates and such forth. And, you know, these subscribers are something like followers on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So you'll encounter people who have like 2,000, 3,000 followers. And sometimes videos like these, pictures like these, they bring up those followers. People want to follow them more because people feed off of these kinds of things.
Does it make you afraid? You yourself? I mean, kind of afraid to grow up?
Yeah, it does. I mean, like now you have to pick your friends very carefully. I try not to have important interactions or even like important conversations over the internet or even over text. I prefer to talk in person because people are kind of like scandalous nowadays. They're just conniving. So
watch out. And there's a lot of technology to take and run with that. Temitayo Fagbenle in New York City, a radio rookie for the public radio station there, WNYC. You have done an important piece of work. My compliments to you, Temitayo. Going to do more?
Yeah, I hope so. I think I'm going to do a follow-up story on this particular story.
We hope
it
you
needs
will.
To be told.
It does need to be. Will you come back and talk with us about it?
Of course, definitely, if you have me.
We will certainly have you. Good luck to you. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Temitayo Fagbenle in New York City, radio rookie for WNYC. Listeners, thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.